Okay, let's dive into something really quite extraordinary today. We're talking about a boy named Nathan, born in Wales, 1993. Seemed like a totally typical kid for the first few years.
Yeah, completely run-of-the-mill early childhood. And then, quite suddenly, around age 4, things took a very, very unusual turn.
A big turn. He started having these night terrors. And we're not talking about, monsters under the bed. These were different.
Very different. His parents described these really intense, almost adult-sounding cries of, like, pure anguish.
And a specific phrase kept coming up, didn't it? Something about trenches.
Exactly. Over and over. They're in the trenches. They're all dead. Just imagine hearing that from your 4-year-old.
It's chilling. And trenches itself. It's not exactly standard preschool vocabulary, is it?
Not at all. That specificity right from the start is, well, it's jarring. It points to something beyond just a bad dream. You've got intense emotion tied to a very specific, very historical setting.
And it wasn't just at night, was it? It carried over into the daytime.
Right. While other kids are drawing houses and families, Nathan was apparently drawing,
Yeah.
well, trenches.
Detailed drawings, too, from what I understand, like military positions, trench layouts, not just wavy lines.
Surprisingly detailed for his age, showing a grasp of structure and, layout that seems way beyond a typical 4 or 5-year-old. Where does a child get that kind of imagery?
That's the question, isn't it? It pushes past simple imagination. Could it be something like, have you heard of cellular memory?
It's one angle people explore in cases like this. The idea, and look, it's not mainstream science, we should be clear, but it suggests that maybe intense experiences, trauma perhaps, could somehow leave an imprint passed down biologically, influencing things like this, almost like inherited echoes.
An echo sounds about right, because then came the language he was using. He started talking about things like bayonet charge.
And mustard gas. Again, words and concepts totally alien to a young child's world, but he was using them, apparently correctly, in that military context.
He even mentioned names, apparently, though we don't have those specifics. It's like these fragments of something else were surfacing.
And all these fragments, the nightmares, the drawings, the specific terminology, they all point directly towards World War I trench warfare. It's so consistent.
As you start wondering, is this something more? You mentioned echoes. What about, the idea of reincarnation, a soul carrying memories?
It's definitely one of the interpretations people gravitate towards, especially when the details are this specific and emotionally charged. Could it be a past life connection breaking through?
His parents, understandably, were probably thinking vivid imagination, maybe something he saw on TV, even briefly, but then they showed the drawings to someone
Ah,
else.
yes, the military historian. That's a key moment.
Apparently, the historian saw these drawings and just went pale. Recognized them.
Recognize them as matching classified British battle plans from 1917.
Classified plans that weren't even declassified until the 2000s. Nathan was drawing these in the mid-90s.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah.
That detail just blows conventional explanations out of the water, doesn't it? It moves it from unusual kid territory into, well, something else entirely.
It really does. If it's not cellular memory, not reincarnation. Could it be some kind of psychic thing, like tapping into the past?
Perhaps. Some theories talk about place memory or residual energy, that intense events might leave a kind of imprint on a location, and certain people might be sensitive to it. Could he have somehow tuned into the frequency of those past events, those plans? It's highly speculative, of course, but.
But the story doesn't stop there. It gets even more specific. The family vacation in France.
Right, near an old war memorial.
And Nathan, out of the blue, just yells, stop, tells him to stop the car.
Gets out, runs into an open field nearby. His parents must have been completely bewildered.
And then he just stops, looks down, and says,
This is where I died, saving my friend Thomas.
just like that, not playing a game, a direct statement, identifying a place of death and a name, Thomas.
That spontaneous certainty, the specific detail, it's incredibly powerful. It's not vague sadness, it's like a direct memory surfacing.
Yeah.
Triggered by what? The location itself.
You have to think the location played a part. His father, understandably shaken, decided to look into it that night. He checked war records.
He found him.
He found him. Private Henry Mills died in that exact area in 1917, and the records confirmed he died trying to rescue another soldier.
Named Thomas Graves.
The names matched, the location matched, the act of heroism matched. The level of corroboration is just staggering.
It really is. Coincidence feels like such an inadequate word here, doesn't it? When you have the historical context, the location, the names, this specific action. all lining up.
From a reincarnation perspective, you could see that as the soul recognizing its final moments, couldn't you?
A powerful, perhaps traumatic re-encounter with a place of immense significance from a previous existence, unlocking those memories. It fits that narrative very compellingly.
And the last thing Nathan apparently said that day in the field, it's haunting.
Was it again?
He said, "Tell my mother I made it home this time."
Wow. As if completing unfinished business from that past life. That adds another layer entirely.
And after that day,
yeah,
he just stopped talking about it. Completely.
The tap turned off, so to speak. But the effects linger, don't they?
Yeah, apparently he still avoids open fields, sleeps with the light on. That suggests a real deep-seated impact, even if the conscious memories aren't surfacing anymore.
It points to genuine trauma, whatever its source, whether it's a past life bleeding through or some form of deep memory being triggered. Something profound and disturbing happened to him, clearly.
So we're left staring at this mystery. Was this kid, Nathan, genuinely remembering the life and death of Private Henry Mills?
Or is there another explanation for how he could possess such accurate, specific, and often classified information?
We've touched on a few possibilities. Reincarnation, the soul returning.
Cellular memory, this idea of inherited trauma or experience may be triggered by environment.
Or maybe something stranger still. A kind of deep resonance, a connection across time that we just don't have the framework to understand yet.
It forces you to question the nature of memory itself. Is it just brain chemistry? Or is it something more? Something that can persist beyond a single lifetime.
And what about fate? Was Nathan somehow destined to have this experience, to find that field? Or was it just an unbelievable chain of chance events?
It's the kind of story that really sticks with you, makes you question the edges of what we think is possible, the sheer weight of the evidence, the personal impact. It's hard to simply dismiss.
Definitely. It challenges our neat boundaries of self and time and experience.
Makes you wonder if maybe those boundaries aren't as solid as we like to think.
So when you think about Nathan's story, the terrors, the drawings matching secret plans, finding the exact spot where Henry Mills died, saving Thomas Graves, those final words, It leaves you with this real sense of, well, wonder, and maybe a little bit of unease.
Indeed. It prompts that final, unsettling question. What if some experiences, some souls perhaps, don't entirely leave? What if their stories continue to echo long after they're gone?